Hello, and welcome to Ox Talk on Tuesday, the 14th of January, 2025. My name is Jake, and I'll be compiling this week's edition, in which you will hear a selection of stories from the local Oxford papers, chosen and read by Leslie Court and Bridget Dool. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Before we start, here is some information about how to access Ox Talk through an Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access Ox Talk online.
Notice to listeners of Ox Talk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to Ox Talk using Alexa. To listen to Ox Talk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to Ox Talk, please follow this procedure.
Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper, or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition. Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to Ox Talk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Ox Talk and we will try to help.
The sunrise today is at 8 o'clock and the sunset is at 4:15. Before the news stories, here is a message from Margaret Simpson, chair of Ox Talk.
From all the Ox Talk volunteers, a happy new year to you. We hope you've enjoyed the festive season. Though the cold weather we have had and are experiencing is not very enjoyable. Please ring the number we include every week in the Ox Talk recording if you have need of help or you have any problems. And we will, if we can, put you in touch with people who will be able to help you. But also, do remember that My Vision Oxfordshire staff are also available for you to contact. And the phone number, which has not changed at all, but I will give you so that you can make a note of it, is 01865 725 595. Now you can listen to the Oxford News for the start of 2025. Good wishes to you. Bye for now.
As we step into the new year, I would like to share a couple of poems which capture the essence of fresh beginnings. The first poem is entitled Embers of Tomorrow. In twilight's hush, the old year sighs, where dreams once danced, now softly lie. The clock conspires, its hands entwine, a spark ignites as hearts align. Fleeting moments we cast away like whispers lost in yesterday. With starlit hopes we venture near, embrace the dawn, a brand new year. Yet shadows linger, echoes wear, of laughter shared, of silent prayer. As embers glow in winter's chill, we gather close in memories fill. For even as the past takes flight, the magic of our hearts ignites in every tear, in every cheer. we breathe anew this bright new year. And my second choice is entitled Whispers of Renewal. In the cracked dawn of January, whispers of fresh resolutions unspool, each breath a promise, each pulse a wish, tracing the outlines of dreams as sunlight spills golden over frost-kissed fields. Hope blooms in the spaces between moments, like wildflowers in untamed soil, every resolve a seed sown in the fertile heart of possibility. As laughter dances in the chill of the air, spirits unfurl, eager for the embrace of change. We gather our stories like scattered stars, dreaming brighter, forging paths in the unmarked year, a canvas untouched, waiting for brushes dipped in courage, for colours that sing of potential. Let the old fade, let the new unveil in the radiant tapestry of time, as we stand resolute, a collective heartbeat filling the air with intentions, a melody of fresh beginnings.
Oxford has been named as the best city in the UK to launch a business by a new study. The study, by Approved Business Finance, looked at factors including commercial property prices, education levels and internet coverage across the UK's 60 largest cities. Oxford came out on top, with commercial space costing an average of £36 a square foot, making it one of the most affordable options in the UK. The city also benefits from a highly educated population, with many Oxford University graduates choosing to stay in the area. The research also found Oxford has relatively few business closures, indicating a strong local economy, the researchers said. Mark Kozo, commercial director of Approved Finance Group, said, "Starting a business in 2025 will be incredibly daunting, with inflation still a major concern for business owners and commercial property prices at historic highs. The cities we've identified, such as Oxford and Bristol, offer great potential for growth, but business owners must always consider their specific needs and resources before making a decision. Bristol came second in the rankings, with commercial spaces costing an average of £57 per square foot."
Essential maintenance works on a major road leading to Oxford city centre will take almost 3 months, the County Council has confirmed. Work on stretches of the Cowley Road between Union Street and Divinity Road was scheduled to begin on Monday the 13th of January. Oxfordshire County Council say the works will continue until Friday the 11th of April, but this is subject to any bad weather or unforeseen circumstances. The works include paving repairs and the installation of additional drainage. The County Council is also investigating opportunities for localised curb line adjustments to improve transport conditions and will alter necessary street furniture where appropriate. It added that road traffic disruption will be kept to a minimum and that signs and barriers will be put in place to show where the works are being carried out. In a statement, the authority said, "Contractors will ensure that affected properties are communicated with directly in advance of any major disruption and throughout the work in their vicinity. There may be some noise disruption during these operations, although the contractor has been asked to keep this to a minimum. They will also be able to direct pedestrians to ensure the safety of the public and workforce during working hours. We ask that people give them their full support and heed their advice, whether they are a pedestrian, a cyclist, or a motorist."
Industrial pollution has been having a negative impact on human health since the Roman Empire, research involving Oxford University has found. A study found lead pollution likely caused widespread IQ declines throughout Europe 2,000 years ago. The researchers used Arctic ice core records to reconstruct historic atmospheric lead pollution in Roman times and link exposure to cognitive decline. Lead exposure is responsible for several negative impacts on human health. In adults, high levels of lead exposure are linked to health issues including infertility, anemia, memory loss, heart disease, cancer, and reduced immune response. While in children, even low levels of exposure have been connected to reduced IQ, concentration challenges, and reduced academic success. More than 500 kilotons of lead were released into the atmosphere during the nearly 200-year height of the Roman Empire, according to the study. The scientists examined three ice core records to identify lead pollution levels in the Arctic between 500 BC and 600 AD. The era spanned the rise of the Roman Republic through the fall of the Roman Empire, with the study focusing on the 200-year height of the empire called the Pax Romana. Lead isotopes allowed the researchers to identify mining and smelting operations throughout Europe as the likely source of pollution during that period. Advanced computer modelling of atmospheric movement then produced maps of atmospheric lead pollution levels across Europe. The researchers identified likely reductions in IQ levels of at least 2 to 3 points among the European population. Study lead author Professor Joe McConnell said, "This is the first study to take a pollution record from an ice core and invert it to get atmospheric concentrations of pollution and then assess human impacts. The idea that we can do this for 2,000 years ago is pretty novel and exciting." Professor McConnell and his team have spent decades examining ice cores from places such as Greenland and Antarctica, where sheets of ice have built up over thousands of years. Using drills, they extract columns of ice as long as 3,400 metres. Gas bubbles trapped in the ice offer insights into the atmosphere of previous eras, while pollutants like lead can be used to interpret mining and industrial activity. When archaeologists and historians learned of the work, they approached him hoping to apply the new techniques to the Roman period. Study co-author Andrew Wilson, professor of the archaeology of the Roman Empire at Oxford University, said, "The resulting research changed our understanding of the era by finding precise linkages between the lead pollution records and historical events such as population declines."
Almost 600 homes have been built in Oxfordshire in the last year by a house builder that has contributed £86 million to the UK's economic output. Barratt Homes West Midlands' recent report highlights these achievements, measuring the company's social and economic contribution to the region over the past financial year. The developer operates in Shropshire, Staffordshire, Warwickshire, Worcestershire, and the West Midlands, as well as in Oxfordshire. The report lists a number of figures related to the company's support for the house building supply chain, local communities, environment, public services, and employment. Barratt Homes West Midlands supported 1,204 jobs directly and through its contractors and suppliers throughout the year. The company also employed 11 new graduates, trainees, and apprentices. Adrian Evans, Managing Director of Barratt Homes West Midlands, said, "We are committed to a strategy that includes leaving a positive and lasting legacy in the communities in which we build homes, be that through job creation, bolstering surrounding businesses, or enhancing and protecting the local environment."
Users of social care services in Oxfordshire are happier with the care they receive than the average in the South East, new figures show. A national survey of social care users found 68.5% of 325 respondents in Oxfordshire said they were satisfied with the care they received. This was higher than the average of 67% across the South East. It comes after government plans to reform the social care system, which are unlikely to be fully delivered in 2028, were labelled a ticking time bomb for Oxfordshire's elderly population by Paul Ringer, the CEO of Age UK Oxfordshire. Across England, 65.4% of recipients of care said they were satisfied with the service they get. ADAS, a membership organisation that represents those working in adult social care, said this variation needs to change, but warned things are likely to get worse. Melanie Williams, president of ADAS, said it's positive to hear social care is working well for many people that can access it, but this report confirms variation exists in care and support according to where people live, and that needs to change. It also shows carers are under great pressure, often being forced to pick up the pieces due to a care system which isn't fully meeting people's needs. The data from the Adult Social Care Outcomes Framework also asked service users a series of questions about their quality of life, inviting them to give a score out of 24. In Oxfordshire, care services received an average score of 19.2, ranking it joint 10th in the South East. As well as those who receive care, the survey was also open to carers themselves. Of the 220 carers who took part in Oxfordshire, 32.7% said they were satisfied with social services. In the South East, 35.4% of carers were also satisfied, less than the 36.7% across England. A Department of Health and Social Care spokesperson said tackling the changes facing adult social care was vital to the government's plans for growth. That is why we're taking the first steps towards building a national care service by introducing legislation that will establish the first ever fair pay agreement for care professionals and increasing the carer's allowance earnings threshold by over £2,300, the biggest rise since the 1970s. Alongside this, we are giving local authorities an additional £3.5 billion in 2025-26, including a £680 million increase in the social care grant to support the sector.
Grace Muir, founder of Heros Charity, has been shortlisted for a Retraining of Racehorses (ROR) award, which acknowledges her commitment to improving the lives of young people in the community. She has been announced as a finalist for the Sir Peter O'Sullivan Charitable Trust ROR Community Impact Award, which honours individuals, partnerships or organisations that have significantly improved people's lives using a former racehorse. Ms Muir established the Homing Ex-Racehorses Organisation Scheme, HEROS, in 2006. The charity aims to rehome and retrain ex-racehorses for various equine disciplines, such as eventing, polo, dressage, and show jumping. Ms Muir's influence extends beyond horses, reaching young people and workers in the racing industry. In 2024, Heros Charity, located at North Farm Stud in Wantage, received an animal award at the BBC Make a Difference Awards in Oxfordshire and Berkshire for its education programmes for 11 to 16-year-olds who struggle in mainstream education. Special educational needs students are taught horse care, functional skills in maths and English, and life skills such as budgeting, healthy eating, teamwork, mindfulness, and conflict resolution. Under Ms Muir's leadership, Heros provides opportunities for those with no prior experience, believing in their ability to learn. Half of her team has additional personal, social or mental health needs, for which she provides tailored support. Ms Muir said, "Being recognised for this award is one of the highlights of this year. We've had a memorable 2024, winning two BBC Make a Difference Awards was amazing, but it's a huge honour to be shortlisted as a finalist with ROR, who I've been working with since 2004. She added, "I have a very strong and supportive board of trustees, particularly Anne Richardson, who is the chair. The Heros and North Farm Stud teams are phenomenal, and our education programmes wouldn't work without them." The winner of the award will be announced at the ROR Awards at the Cheltenham Racecourse on Festival Trials Day on January the 25th. On Thursday, the 9th of January, 100 tractors descended on Oxford City Centre and farmers spoke about the terrifying prospect of having to sell their farms in Oxfordshire. Protesting against the government family farm tax, the farmers gathered outside the examination schools on Oxford High Street, where the Environment Secretary, Steve Reed, was speaking. He was drowned out by the sound of tractors beeping as he spoke, as Tom Bradshaw, President of the National Farmers Union, spoke to protesters through the gates outside the building. Tractors arrived at the protest at 9 a.m, causing a traffic gridlock on either side of the city centre. They were displayed with signs that said, "No farms, no food, axe the tax," and "Death to Reeves, not the UK." Farmers from across Oxfordshire organised the protest in collaboration with the Conservative Rural Forum against the government's plans to change the rules around inheritance tax relief for farmers. Andy Corner, who appeared at the protest on his tractor, owns a farm in Oxfordshire. When asked what would happen to his livelihood if the family farm tax went ahead, he said, "Realistically, my family will have to sell the farm. We're just not making enough money to support that. We might be asset rich, but most of us aren't actually planning on selling. We're planning on moving it on to our families. The money that we've got is for the next generation and trying to make a living for them." When asked what message he wanted to send to Mr. Reed, he said, "Listen to us, because if you don't listen to us, we're going to get bigger and stronger. We're not going to roll over." Heidi Smith, who owns a medium-sized family farm in Oxfordshire, said that farmers in the county face more difficulty. She said, "In Oxfordshire, land values are very high, which means our farms are valued even more highly because land is in demand for other things like housing. On our death, the value of the farm is going to be higher, even though an acre of land only produces a certain amount of return. It's even more difficult for people in areas of the county with higher land values." Fellow Oxfordshire farmer Julie Adams added, "We don't believe a word he says because he lied last year. He promised not to bring in the inheritance tax and he has, so his words mean nothing really." James Wright, Director of Policy, Southwest of the Conservative Rural Forum, said, "I'm a family farmer, and the simple fact is that in my lifetime, the farm will not make enough money to pay the family farm tax. That means that when a farmer comes to pass on, that farm to their children, they will have to sell up. The people who buy those farms will be charities and corporations. They won't produce food. The message is overwhelming in the farming community."
A University of Oxford professor has joined the House of Lords. Professor Nigel Biggar, a leading centre-right intellectual, has been nominated for a peerage. He becomes the 11th former Oriel College student to currently be sitting in the House of Lords. Professor Biggar, who was Oriel's chaplain from 1990 to 1999 and Oxford's Regius Professor of Moral and Pastoral Theology from 2007 to 2022, was appointed a CBE for Services to Higher Education in 2021. The Provost, Lord Mendoza, described him as an exceptionally deserving nominee for a peerage. Professor Biggar said, "The grant of a peerage marks the culmination of a 40-year journey through academe and the church into British public life. I am deeply grateful to have lived to see the day and to have the opportunity to contribute my ethical expertise to Parliament's deliberations, not least about free speech and decolonisation, and the Conservative Party's intellectual renewal." After studying modern history at Oxford, Professor Biggar went on to study religious studies and then Christian theology at the University of Chicago before continuing in academia at other universities. He also founded the MacDonald Centre for Theology, Ethics and Public Life at the University of Oxford.
Tucked away off Oxford High Street, the Bear Inn is one of the city's smallest pubs. It also claims to be the oldest and was the Oxford Mail Pub of the Week for the second week of this year. Owned by Fullers, the Bear in Alfred Street is thought to date back to 1606. It is very much on the tourist trail, despite its hidden backstreet location, and added lots of outside seating to survive various lockdowns during the pandemic. The building dates from 1606, but was originally a tavern called the Jolly Trooper in 1774. It was renamed the Bear in 1801 after the old building was demolished. Dave Richardson of the Oxford branch of CAMRA, Campaign for Real Ale, said, "The Bear is a true character pub, and inside it has kept that character, which isn't always the case when a brewery or large pub company is involved, so hats off to Fuller's for respecting its historical significance. It's a regular in the Good Beer Guide, and still at the heart of university life for many of its regulars, although it also attracts many town regulars too. You have to pick a time to enjoy the Bear at its best, when it's a bit less crowded, but the outside seating has helped it weather the challenges of the last few years and appeal to a wider audience." The name of the pub relates to the 15th century Earl of Warwick, Richard Neville, whose symbol is a bear and ragged staff. In his book Oxford Pubs, Mr. Richardson writes, "The Bear's main and possibly unique claim to fame is its collection of more than 4,000 ties, which have been pinned in cabinets on the walls and even the ceiling. The collection of ties was started in 1954 by landlord and Oxford Male cartoonist Alan Corse, who started snipping the bottom off ties worn by customers. Many of them are grouped into themes, with one display case being full of ties associated with hockey clubs. The pub has now run out of space to display any more ties, even though customers still sometimes offer them. Numerous celebrities over the decades have visited the pub, including movie stars Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton in 1963. Burton had just visited his friend Neville Coghill, Professor of English Literature at Merton College. Rock singer Ian Gillan is thought to have agreed to join Black Sabbath following an all-day session at the bar at the Bear in 1983. The pub features in a single episode of Inspector Morse, Absolute Conviction, when Morse chases an escaped prisoner through the bar. Food served at the pub includes a selection of burgers, scampi, and fish and chips. A French restaurant in Summertown has been shortlisted for the Good Food Guide Awards 2025. In July last year, Pompette in Summertown was named in the top 100 eateries in the UK by the Good Food Guide 2024. Now it has been shortlisted in the Best Value Set Menu section of the Guides Awards. It is competing with Josephine Bouchon, London, The Palmerston, Edinburgh, Dilsk in Brighton, Wilson's in Bristol, and the Devonshire in London. It will be celebrated at a glittering ceremony on February the 3rd at the Theatre Royal, Drury Lane in central London. The Good Food Award Guide Awards 2025, in partnership with Open Table, are gearing up to name the best of emerging and established excellence in British dining in 2025. The awards will be hosted by TV presenter Richard Bacon. Chloe Hamilton, co-editor of the Good Food Guide, said, "This year's shortlist is a magnificent mix of starry names alongside some brilliant lesser-known talent that anyone interested in restaurants should be taking note of. If last year's ceremony is anything to go by, our return to the Theatre Royal, Drury Lane, is set to be a huge night of celebration with some revelations to remember." The Summertown restaurant, charcuterie and wine bar, is owned by Oxford Brookes alumni with French roots, Pascal Wiedemann and his wife, Laura. Named after the French word for tipsy, Pompette opened in late 2018 and started to garner impressive reviews after offering the residents of North Oxford something a little different. The restaurant replaced Portobello in South Parade and has a rotating menu, predominantly serving mainly French cuisine. The Good Food Guide was first compiled by Raymond Postgate in 1951. According to the guide, much has changed since the first edition, but the ethos of the original book remains firmly in place. The guide is about empowering diners, helping readers to find the very best places to eat, and encouraging restaurants to offer the best possible food service and experience. Owned by Knife and Fork Media, which also runs industry platform Code Hospitality, the Good Food Guide is now a fully digital publication featuring 1,200 restaurants, pubs, cafes and wine bars across Britain. All reviews are conducted anonymously by a network of inspectors and all meals are paid for in full. No establishment can buy its way into the guide, and as a result, the publication is one of the most trusted sources of where to eat well in Britain. More information about the guide can be found by searching www.thegoodfood-guide.co.uk.
Much of Oxfordshire has experienced snow recently, and with it came an increased risk to people's homes. In response, homeowners have received tips from My Builder on how to protect their properties from the cold. Andy Sims, a building expert from My Builder, said, "Cold weather can wreak havoc on our homes. As always, preparing for the weather in advance is always the best option, but there are some last-minute jobs you can do to protect your home. Frozen pipes are a particular pain and can cause plenty of issues, with leaks long after the cold weather has left. If you follow our top tips, your home will be well prepared for the forthcoming cold weather and prevent any issues occurring. People are advised to protect outdoor taps by disconnecting any hose pipes over the winter and insulating outdoor taps. In the event of a broken outdoor tap, people will need to know where their stopcock is and so are advised to make sure they know its location. Other advice includes regularly getting boilers checked and keeping heating on at low level while away from home. My Builder also suggests installing smart technology such as a remote thermostat to set the temperature, insulating the cold parts of the home to prevent pipes from colder temperatures, and managing airflow to keep all of the house at a similar temperature.
Oxford University's Vice-Chancellor has been paid £573,000 while students have, quote, sunk into debt, unquote. This comes after new research showed bosses of the UK's top universities now earn, on average, £400,000 a year, despite the financial issues affecting the higher education sector. Despite a plea for more funding from the government, Vice-Chancellor pay has risen overall, while students' tuition fees will rise in the autumn from £9,250 to £9,535. Times Higher Education magazine looked into the 2023-24 accounts of 19 UK universities and found the median pay package of vice-chancellors had risen for another year straight. This included the £573,000 executive pay for Oxford University Vice-Chancellor Irene Tracy, who received a salary of £410,000 and an accommodation payment worth £100,000 for her first full year at Oxford. John O'Connell from the Taxpayers Alliance said, "Taxpayers will be baffled by the eye-watering scale of these pay packets. While students sink into debt, university fat cats are raking in bloated salaries and plush perks." The new research also showed the Oxford and Cambridge vice-chancellors also received the largest base salaries. A Russell Group spokesman said, "Vice-chancellors lead large global institutions, each with thousands of staff members, delivering high-quality education, breakthrough research and invaluable contributions to cities and regions across the UK. The process for setting senior pay is done as rigorous and in as transparent a way as possible." A road safety charity has urged drivers not to overload electrical systems in cars amid a spike in vehicle fires on Oxfordshire roads. There have been several vehicle fires on roads across the county in 2025 already, with incidents near Bicester and on the M40 on January the 2nd, and one on the A40 near Cutslow on New Year's Day. According to the National Incident Recording System, there were 105 vehicle fires on Oxfordshire roads, none of which were from electric vehicles. Richard Gladman, Chief Examiner of Road Safety, of road safety charity IAM RoadSmart, said, "It is very unlikely that the increase in vehicle fires is due to an increase in EVs. While a fire in an EV may be harder to extinguish, the component parts in a petrol vehicle are much more likely to cause a fire. Of course, there is the middle ground where a plug-in hybrid vehicle can have a battery and petrol." He added, "To help stay safe, make sure your vehicle is maintained. If you smell petrol, get it checked. Don't add accessories that overload the electrical system, such as fog lamps, and accessory lamps should be fitted with a relay to ensure that they do not damage the system. Don't carry petrol around in the boot of a car. Make sure your battery in the car is properly secured. Only charge your EV with a properly certified cable and don't plug a charger into an extension lead." Andy Ford from Oxfordshire County Council's Fire and Rescue Service said, "To try to prevent vehicle fires, look for signs of wear and tear damage and have your car regularly inspected or serviced through a mechanic or EV specialist or via the car manufacturer's dealership. If you have any accidents, even small bumps, have the vehicle inspected by a specialist or car dealership. Even the smallest dent to a battery pack on an electrical vehicle could cause it to catch fire. Beware of bad connections and brittle insulation. Any alterations and modifications to vehicles should be carried out by a competent person, preferably a qualified mechanic or vehicle specialist. If your vehicle does catch fire, get to a point of safety and call 999. Do not attempt to try and extinguish the fire yourself, as this is unlikely to be effective." Last year, the AA released data which showed a decrease in the number of vehicle fires nationally in the last 2 years. However, AA spokesman for Road Incidents and Hazards, Tony Rich, said that an increase in the average annual number of vehicle fire fatalities went up from 23 between 2015 and 16 and 2019 to 20 to 28.5 in the last two financial years and was a major worry.
People across Oxfordshire can donate their unwanted clothes, shoes and handbags to help the firefighters charity raise £60,000 this month. The charity is running its Bag It and Bank It campaign throughout January, encouraging donations to help support the UK fire service community. People can donate their unwanted items at clothes banks located at fire stations across the UK. The charity has set up more than 1,000 recycling banks, which can be located using a map on its website. It has asked people not to leave bags outside the clothing banks if they are full. The charity said, "From everyone at Firefighters Charity, thank you for helping us to support members of our UK fire family. The recycling scheme is a significant source of revenue for the charity, which receives £120 for every tonne of donated clothing." The charity said, "We really appreciate all of the donations made. It's aiming to raise £1 million through various forms of recycling and said with the public's help, it can continue to increase the amount of money raised each year. The campaign will also see the return of the Bag It and Bank It Recycling Championship."
Words commonly used in association with video games and the name of a Dutch sweet treat are among the terms that have been added to the Oxford English Dictionary. The new additions come as part of the dictionary's quarterly update and include player character and non-player character, along with their abbreviations NPC and PC, meaning characters those playing video games can and cannot control. Cheat code and cutscene are also among the gaming terms added to the book, with the former meaning a code which is entered to give a player access to hidden features, and the latter meaning a scene which is watched in between gameplay. Elsewhere, Stroopwafel has been added to the English dictionary, excuse me, thanks to the treat's growing popularity in the UK. The snack, which originated in the Netherlands, consists of two thin waffles separated by a syrup or caramel filling, and is traditionally placed on top of a hot drink to warm it. Snark, meaning a person who complains in an indirect or sarcastic way, blandify, which means to make something bland, and the phrase cozy crime, which means a genre of crime novels without graphic descriptions of violence, have also been added. The term board gamers has been added to mean those who play board games, along with the phrase three-dimensional chess, which had previously been associated with the sci-fi TV series Star Trek, but is now used to describe a particularly complex activity. Also among the December editions were passion project, to mean a challenge undertaken for personal enjoyment rather than financial gain, and lickass, meaning someone who flatters another excessively. The history of the Oxford English Dictionary dates back to the mid-19th century, when a proposal was drawn up for the Philological Society, a London-based organisation devoted to the scholarly study of language. This outlined the perceived lack of existing English language dictionaries and called for a compilation of a new English dictionary. Oxford University Press agreed to publish the work, spearheaded by Richard Chenevix Trench, Herbert Coleridge, and Frederick Furnival, in 1879. At this time, James Murray was agreed to be the new editor from within the members of the Philological Society. The first part of the dictionary was issued in 1884, and the first edition was completed in 1928. The work relied on so much correspondence that a postbox was installed outside Mr. Murray's Oxford home. In the 1990s, work began on a revision of the dictionary with the aim to create a completely updated text. This was the first time that material written by Mr. Murray had been edited. Campaigners are urging an Oxford University college to stop felling trees in ancient woodland. St Hilda's College bought Radley Largewood, 56 acres of woodland between Sugworth Lane and Kennington, in 2022. In recent months, contractors have been felling trees after the college cited concerns about ash dieback disease. Conservationist Oliver Tickle, former editor of The Ecologist magazine, is leading a group of campaigners who are calling for the college to stop felling trees. Mr. Tickle said, "This is high quality ancient woodland and Forestry Commission practice guidance is not being observed. No more than 10% of trees should be felled, but the contractors have already felled 15% in a few months. I believe the contractors have convinced the college there's a big problem with ash dieback when there isn't. And this has led to a high density forestry operation, which can be done cheaply with big machines rather than using chainsaws." Mr. Tickell said, "Contractors were pulling out huge volumes of trees and estimated the value of timber felled so far to be £100,000. He has arranged a meeting with college bursar Chris Wood and added, "We are all calling for this work to stop." Fellow campaigner Sylvia Vetter said, "The college bought Radley Largewood and at a public meeting it gave the impression that it would abide by guidelines for managing ancient woodland. Instead, it is wreaking destruction, including felling of old but healthy oaks. I have been walking in these woods since the 1970s. When I first came here, it felt magical, like a little bit of paradise. That's why I'm heartbroken at the destruction." Paul Gamble, a nature writer from Radley, who has lived in the area for 35 years, said, "The contractors have overstepped the mark. They have damaged trees, flora and fauna, and the soil with the vehicles that they have used." Mr. Tickell said the work so far had demonstrated multiple breaches of Forestry Commission's practice guide on ancient woodland. These included providing no protection for bats, despite their known presence in the wood, the mass felling of ash on claimed grounds of Chalara infection, and operations being conducted in very wet conditions on waterlogged ground, causing serious damage to fragile soil and rendering paths impassable. College bursar Mr. Wood has been asked to comment.
An Oxford University epidemiologist has combined her decades-old passion for football with her dream to publish a book by writing about the history of the women's game. Claire McEwan's new book, She Can Kick It, explores women's football over the course of a century. The book delves into key events in women's football history, exploring the circumstances leading to the 1921 ban and celebrating pioneering women who formed teams despite considerable opposition. It also acknowledges the male allies who promoted the game, sometimes at great personal cost. The book covers the unofficial Euros and World Cups, which, while unsanctioned by UEFA and FIFA, drew tens of thousands of fans. Ms. McEwan's journey to becoming an author began at the age of 9 when she was inspired by a fellow young writer. By 1999, at the age of 23, she had shifted her focus to health writing and landed her first writing job at Oxford University, aiding two doctors in writing a book. As senior features writer and columnist for the Women's Football magazine, she regularly covers current issues in women's football. With quotes from ex-Lionesses and Bend It Like Beckham creator Gurinder Chadha, She Can Kick It showcases the evolution of women's football from young women defying the odds to today's superstars.
The Liberal Democrats have defended the use of tabloid-style leaflets that imitate local newspapers, despite political parties being criticised for the tactic in the past. The Henley and Tame Observer was recently distributed on behalf of Lib Dem MP Freddie Van Mierlo, who represents Henley and Tame. The leaflet includes quotes from both the BBC and the Oxford Mail's coverage of the general election in July. People living in the Vale of White Horse district have also received similar leaflets on behalf of Leila Moran, Liberal Democrat MP for Oxfordshire West and Abingdon. While the Lib Dems say this is not unique to their party and that it serves as an effective way of communicating with residents, critics have accused them as masquerading as local newspapers to sell themselves to voters. When requested for comment, a spokesperson for the Liberal Democrats said, "Tabloid newspapers are an effective way of communicating with people and are used by all political parties. All our campaigning literature, including tabloids, makes it clear that it has come from the Liberal Democrats. We rolled out guidelines to ensure that this is the case, which go further than parties' legal requirements. It is crucial that this campaigning literature states that it comes from political parties." They also claim to be the only party with a clear plan to save and protect local journalism and give the threat of social media and big tech companies. They added, "Having strong local media plays a critical role in holding those in power to account, and we will continue working closely with great local newspapers across the country." Eddie Reeves, leader of the Conservative group on both the County Council and Chirwell District Council, said, "The Henley and Tame Observer is simply Lib Dem propaganda paid for by the party. Residents should read the disclaimer in small print at the foot of the front page, which legally requires them to admit that truth. Year after year, Lib Dems circulate campaign materials that masquerade as independent local newspapers in an attempt to sell themselves to voters as similarly independent-minded politicians. People are beginning to get wise to them, and eventually they will have had enough of such tactics. We should support our local newspapers, not denigrate them by mimicking them. Genuine freedom of the press is a vital civil liberty in a democratic society. Liberals of all people should know and respect such freedom. Shame on the Lib Dems for being neither liberal nor democratic." Both the Liberal Democrat and Conservative parties were criticised for distributing fake local newspapers in the run-up to last year's general election. Mr. Van Mierlo MP was initially contacted for comment. Inspector Morse actor Kevin Whateley has revealed his family's experience with Alzheimer's disease. The disease is a brain disorder that causes a gradual decline in memory and reasoning skills and is the most common type of dementia. The actor, who was awarded the OBE in the New Year's Honours list, has spoken about how he became an ambassador for the Alzheimer's Society. He has been determined to campaign for improved research and funding for dementia, which was motivated by his own mother's diagnosis. His mother, Mary, was diagnosed with Alzheimer's in the late 1990s and lived with the disease for 10 years before passing away in 2009. Reflecting on his mother's life, the TV star described the grammar school teacher as a fiercely independent woman who became angry as her memory started to fail. Mr. Whateley told the Telegraph, At first, she would forget where she'd left the car, or she'd lose her house keys. It was hard to be sure what the problem was at first, but she became increasingly depressed. Mr. Whateley, the 73-year-old who lives near Milton Keynes, has taken on the Trek 26 in honour of his mother and participated in the memory walk. He has also supported the release of the Game Changer app, a research project that asks people without dementia to play games on a smartphone app to help improve how the condition is diagnosed, researched, and treated. In 2009, the Inspector Morse star revealed that the diagnosis had impacted him and his siblings greatly, as they would take turns to make daily phone calls and weekly 700-mile round trips to their mother's home in Hexham. He also recalled the moment Mary attempted to walk home, forgetting she was 300 miles from her beloved Northumberland. She was later admitted to hospital and finally transferred to a private care home in West London. It was a struggle to find somewhere. There aren't many good homes, and essentially you're waiting for some poor soul to die, Mr. Whateley said. The Cumbrian-born actor played Robbie Lewis in the Oxford-based crime drama Inspector Morse, alongside John Thor, between 1987 and 2000. He reprised the role of Robbie Lewis in the ITV drama Lewis alongside Lawrence Fox, and the series ran from 2006 to 2015. For many years, Mr. Whateley was a familiar face during filming on Oxford streets and would sometimes stop and chat to fans and passers-by. He said he was delighted to receive the OBE for services to drama and charity. The screen star added, "He was grateful and delighted by the honour, and appreciated that actors could help to raise awareness and money for charities." He pointed out that it was the full-time charity workers who deserve recognition.
Asda has brought back its £1 meal deal for over 60s, with unlimited free tea and coffee. The winter warmer deal is back on sale and runs until the end of February. It offers hot soup, a roll and unlimited tea and coffee for just £1. Choose from tomato, chicken or vegetable soup, and it's available to anyone aged 60 or over. In the first 2 weeks, over 60,000 meals have already been served to pensioners. There are a number of Asda stores across Oxfordshire, including in Wheatley, Carterton and Didcot. Asda's community and customer champions are also inviting and encouraging many local over 60s groups and individuals to come along to their store, Chatty Cafe, to use the £1 winter warmer meal as an opportunity to come and chat to others. It comes as research suggests 1 in 10 older people say they go to a supermarket simply to speak to another person. Almost 1 in 5 said there were days when they didn't speak to a single soul, and during the 2.5 week spell running from mid-December to the end of the year, 15% said they got used to not conversing with other people. The retailer first launched its winter warmers in November 2022 for 2 months in a bid to support older customers who were disproportionately affected by the spiralling living costs, with 65 to 74-year-olds experiencing £163 year-on-year drop in disposable income in August 2022. The initiative saw over 1.2 million soup meals served, and the retailer has now brought back the deal until February the 28th this year. The offer is available all day, every day, and will run alongside the Kids Eat for £1 offer, which continues to be hugely popular, with more than 4.9 million meals served since its launch in June 2022, and over 1.8 million in the last year alone. Grandparents can bring along their grandchildren and all eat in Asda cafes for as little as £4, which covers two adults and two children. The latest figures from Asda's income tracker reveal that the lowest income households will continue to feel the impact of the cost of living crisis for a little longer. The spending power of these households is increasing more slowly than others, meaning for many people their net income does not cover bills and essential spending, leaving them with an average weekly shortfall of £66.
A village near Wallingford has celebrated the passing of midwinter through traditional dancing and performances. A wassail took place in Brightwell cum Sotwell once again on the 12th night this year. An ancient tradition of processing round the village and waking up the trees and driving away evil spirits. The tradition, which dates back to Roman times in cider-producing regions of West and South England, has become a popular way for the community to celebrate their rural roots and connect with neighbours. A spokesperson for Armleg and Border Morris, who play and dance in the procession that finished at the Red Lion pub, said, We're always delighted to the wassail and have been part of it for more than 10 years. We very much look forward to it. Wassailing includes performances from Morris dancers, bands, and a traditional mummers play, as well as a Christmas tree tossing competition and fireworks. The village raises funds for the festival every year, with any surplus money used for purchasing and planting native trees across the parish. New research suggests that deep sleep may help to clear away waste that builds up in the brain during the day. The study, conducted by Danish scientists, including one from the University of Oxford, indicates a good night's sleep clears the mind like a dishwasher cleans crockery. The findings also provide insights into how sleeping pills may disrupt this brainwashing system, potentially affecting cognitive function in the long term. Researchers already knew about the brain's built-in waste removal process, known as the glymphatic system, which circulates fluid in the brain and spinal cord to clear out waste. This process helps to remove toxic proteins that form sticky plaques linked to the neurological disorders such as Alzheimer's disease. However, what drives the system had remained unclear until now. The Danish scientists discovered a molecule called norepinephrine, I hope I've pronounced that correctly, plays a key role in brain cleaning in mice. During deep sleep, the brainstem releases tiny waves of norepinephrine about once every 50 seconds. Senior study author, Professor Makin Nedergaard, from the University of Rochester, New York, and the University of Copenhagen, Denmark, said that norepinephrine triggers blood vessels to contract, generating slow pulsations that create a rhythmic flow in the surrounding fluid to carry waste away. She said, "It's like turning on the dishwasher before you go to bed and waking up with a clean brain." The researchers then compared the changes in blood volume to brain fluid flow. They found that brain fluid flow fluctuates in correspondence to blood volume changes, suggesting the vessels act as pumps to propel the surrounding brain fluid to flush out waste. Study lead author Dr. Natalie Hordglund from the University of Copenhagen and the University of Oxford said, "You can view norepinephrine as the conductor of an orchestra. There's a harmony in the constriction and dilation of the arteries, which then drives the cerebral spinal fluid through the brain to remove the waste products." The research team then gave zolpidem, a common drug to aid sleep, to mice. They found the norepinephrine waves during deep sleep were 50% lower in zolpidem-treated mice than naturally sleeping mice. Although the zolpidem-treated mice fell asleep faster, fluid transported into the brain dropped by more than 30%. The researchers say their findings suggest that the sleeping aid may disrupt norepinephrine-driven waste clearance during sleep. Dr. Hoglund said, "More and more people are using sleep medication, and it's really important to know if that's healthy sleep."
That was the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about OxTalk, you can telephone Margaret on 07496 062 280. That's 07496 062 280. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. You can also listen on an Alexa device through the Talking Newspapers skill.